information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
Right, so thank you everybody for coming. Thanks to Deb for organising.
And Wayne.
And Wayne, yes, of course. I haven't met Wayne before just now, so thank you, Wayne. I've just got a couple of things to sort of just start with quickly. I'm going to be racing through quite a lot of material tonight, as we're having a chat with Marcus. We've both got like probably 3 or 4 hours of material to fit into less than that. I've got some, a couple of people have gotten through to the room in there. I've got some books and things in there. These books are not sold to make money. This book, my book, about what you'll see tonight, self-published, £7. You can download this, the contents of this book for free, so you don't have to buy it. I've also got an MP3 audio CD of it, 50 pence, for the whole content spread out, so you can put it on your iPod or whatever way you've got, your phone or something. I've got some booklets, I've got DVDs, that's all in there. And the other book, which I don't know if I've got a picture of here, oops, let's go there. The other book, which, this is a very dangerous book, it's called Where Did the Towers Go? Almost not published this book by my friend Dr. Judy Woods, who's a former professor in mechanical engineering. I'm going to talk quite a lot about what's in this book tonight, but there's a lot more in it besides. The foreword of this book.
Oh, stepping on yourself.
Shouldn't be doing that, should switch it off. Right. The foreword of that book, the foreword of that textbook, was written by a chap called Professor Eric Larson, who's written a book called The Skull of Yorick, The Emptiness of American Thinking. So those are the three books. That I haven't got a copy of the Eric Larson book, but he's a professor at New York University, and he describes Where Did the Towers Go book as the most important book of the 21st century. I agree with him, because I know what's in it, and I know what the conclusion of that book is. So, I'm going to start with President Eisenhower.
In the Council of Governments, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizen can compare the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together. Today, the solitary inventor, tinkering in his shop, has been overshadowed by tasks in laboratories and testing fields. In the same fashion, the pre-university, historically the fountainhead of free ideas and scientific discovery, has experienced a revolution in the conduct of research, partly because of the huge costs involved. A government contract becomes virtually a substitute for intellectual curiosity. For every old blackboard, there are now hundreds of new electronic computers. The prospect of domination of the nation's scholars by federal employment, project allocations, and the power of money is ever present and is gravely to be regarded. Yet in holding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of the scientific, technological elite.
And I think there's probably a few sort of free man people in the room, if I can give it that sort of, I don't hesitate to give it a label, but and I think that what Eisenhower said fits right in with that. We know that we're now all, you know, sort of prisoners of this industrial complex, this military industrial complex which runs the planet. But I think the extremes of power that this, you know, this entity people don't commonly realise, and in fact that body itself tries to cover up what is known about its capabilities. To acquire knowledge one must study, but to acquire wisdom one must observe. In all of this, in all that I've been doing over the last few years, I'm pretty much just an observer really. I don't really think I've done a whole lot else than observe and then write up what I've found and discovered. What I'm going to try and skip through tonight, I'm going to look at some preliminary 9/11 truth issues. My initial involvement with 9/11 truth activities, I'll give you a quick summary of that. My background is actually in software engineering. I did sort of computer programming and software design for about 20 years. I don't do so much of that now and in very little bit. And I currently work part-time for the Open University, tutoring on a computing course, and I also assess disabled students for access to higher education. So that's what I do. I seem to have sort of been had a kind of a calling to do this sort of thing, because I don't do it to make any money. I try and cover my costs, but that's about it. We're going to look at evidence of media fakery on and before 9/11. We're going to look at evidence which indicates that there were no large Boeing crashes at the World Trade Center. We're going to look at evidence for the use of some type of directed energy weaponry used to destroy most of the World Trade Center. So all this stuff you've heard about molten metal, thermite, controlled demolition, that is what I call the official conspiracy theory of 9/11. And what you may, or a few of you may have heard of, is that what I'm putting on the table for you tonight, which is Dr. Gene Wood's research, essentially, with a tiny little bit of my research, much of that has already been submitted to court, and that was done 4 years ago. That nobody wanted to talk about then, and nobody wants to talk about now, including people in the 9/11 so-called truth movement. Evidence that there is an active, ongoing effort to cover up and discredit the research into Jew, no planes, and some of those individuals undertaking this activity, which is what my book's about. Those two books that I referenced in the introduction, Dr. Judy Wood's book is a reverse engineering of how the World Trade Center was destroyed, and it proves how it was done. We know how it was done. We know the technology that was used, or at least the sort of principles on which it operates. That is now known. It's not a theory, right? It's known. It is the truth. Now, of course, that is such an important thing, you shouldn't take my word for it. I encourage you to go and check this evidence for yourself, because it's of such huge importance. You know, you need to do that. You can't possibly take my word for it. And we'll look at additional 9/11 related evidence and issues. Now, I'll just start off by saying I used to believe the official story of 9/11. I believe that those planes hit the World Trade Center, that they were flown by Muslim terrorists, all of that. I believe that up until probably sort of late 2003, early 2004, when I started looking at other stuff and finding some interesting information. Over time, I learned about how governments lie to a far greater extent than even heavy-hitting investigative journalists such as John Pilger, Greg Palast, those sorts of guys are willing to publicly state. They won't cover any of this stuff, even people like John Pilger, who's done some really good stuff. Governments have a history of being involved in false flag terrorism, that phrase that we all, you know, are familiar with now, probably in this room, I think most people are familiar with that. And so I generally think that up until September 11, 2001, the scale of the attacks was small and was generally restricted to diplomatic embassies and or countries where conflicts were often already in progress. You know, then 9/11 was just on a totally different scale to all those other things, you know, the 1993 bombing with the guy being found as an FBI informant, all that. This was on a different scale, you know. So we know 9/11, or I know 9/11 was a big illusion. I think most of the people, I would guess, in this room have looked at it that way. But how big an illusion was it? Would you be willing to think that there are layers of deception? How big was the deception? Are there layers of deception set up and managed by the perpetrators to hide the truth for as long as possible, to keep us guessing? You think of sieving flour. You have a coarse sieve to get the big lumps, and then you have a fine sieve to get the little lumps. What if the 9/11 cover-up is like that, and you have these layers where you're catching certain people in those layers? I think that's precisely what the way it worked in my experience. I've been looking at this for sort of 7 years now. So I think, yes, there is a conspiracy within a conspiracy, if you like, if you want to call it that. I'll just use a little sort of pictorial example here. Now, this is a nice picture, isn't it? Some of you may have seen this before, and you think, well, that's quite an interesting picture, quite artsy-fartsy, next to a lake, couple embracing one another. You know, somewhat frigid scene, perhaps, but quite interesting nevertheless. So what I'm going to show you is what is embedded in that picture. Once you saw it, you'll remember it. Did you see the shape of the baby in the picture, the head, and fingers, and feet? So my illustration there is that once you've seen that picture, you probably remember it, And you, whenever you look at that picture, you will always see the baby, and I've pointed it out to you, the shape of the baby. In other words, once you've seen the pattern in the data, a new picture emerges. You see, you have this new understanding of what's there. And that's what my experience has been like with all this stuff. Now, if you want to find the truth about something, if you're really a truth seeker in any way, whether you're just a regular scientist, or whether you work in a court as a judge, or a detective of any kind, you have to look at the evidence before deciding on the conclusion. You can't just say, well, I know what happened. I know that fire brought down the towers. I know that planes crashed. You have to be open to new evidence. If somebody comes along and says, well, hang on a minute, those plane stories are not quite as clear-cut as you might think, and here's why. If you just say to them, no, I'm not interested in why, then you ain't going to find the truth. Court cases, investigations, etc. are sometimes reopened, and appeals are initiated when new evidence comes to light. And presumably you're all in this room because you have some curiosity, you came across something, thought, hang on a minute, that's not right. I have to go and look at this again. So, that's what I'm talking about. I'm not going to read all this slide out, but basically we've got to look carefully at the evidence. Now, my work as a software engineer involved dealing with a lot of detail. Right? If I wanted to get my program working, I had to look at it for hours sometimes to find out where this little tiny mistake was, which might have been just one character that was incorrect, or one small term. So I'm used to working with a lot of detail. But also, looking at the evidence, you've got to look at who's presenting it, and you've got to look at any they might be putting spin on it. I might be spinning this evidence to try and convince you of something. And you should be wary of that. Who is this guy? What's his background? You should be looking at that kind of thing as much as you can. What's his motivation? So you should be looking at those sorts of things and trying to find that out, if it's really important stuff. If it's not important, you don't need to worry about it. Now, you can always watch carefully for instances of people attacking the messenger rather than the data. So I'm going to give you some data, right? But I've been attacked for giving people this data. And I was talking about a little bit about this to Wayne in one example. I'm going to give you some examples of that as we go through this. And you can look for inconsistent or false statements. And you can sometimes detect when people are outright lying. And again, I've got a couple of examples of that. Threatening behaviour as well. That's another key one. But what I'm going to show you here is a lot of the photographs from Dr. Judy Wood's collection. Now, Dr. Judy Wood, she's a former professor of mechanical engineering. She's looked at a collection of over 40,000 pictures from the World Trade Center, approximately over the last few years, and video, and this sort of thing. She's looked at the NIST archives, FEMA archives, all kinds of public records, and she's worked out what happened, right? So that's what most of this is based on. I'm sort of kind of like summarising what some of Chief research and sort of what I found in relation to that. So some people think, for example, that NIST have kept all the interesting photos and videos about 9/11. I've heard people like Steve Jones say this on one or two occasions, and they've kept them classified. This isn't true. There's plenty in the public domain to work out what happened. You've just got to look at it. Got to look for it. Now, going back to what I did, I woke up in 2004. I organised a small film show of George Humphrey's film 9/11 The Great Illusion in my local area. I wrote letters to MPs a couple of times, generally a waste of time, including yourself probably. And I saw Jimmy Walter and William Rodriguez in May 2005 in London. I organised an event for David Cherry and Anne National to speak out in Derby in December 2005. I hired one of the local cinemas, we got 120 people, showed the Loose Change film. And then one of the main things which comes into the book that I wrote, I joined Scholars for 9/11 Truth. Because of my involvement in the Open University, that was part of the reason why I was invited to join Scholars for 9/11 Truth. And that was in December 2005. I organised the two William Rodriguez events in February 2007, a few sort of local radio appearances and things like that. And we're giving out thousands of DVDs and leaflets and stuff like that. Okay, just to note, I don't speak for Dr. Judy Wood. I'm going to show you some of the stuff that she sort of put together, but I don't speak for her. She may disagree with some of what I say. I may make slight mistakes in some of what I've said, and this sort of thing. So these people like Rosalie Gradle, Morgan Reynolds, and a few other people that have collected some of this evidence, they stood by it, they presented it, and I've kind of just, some of it is in this presentation, some of it is my own research. Okay, but before 9/11, there were plans apparently afoot to do something like 9/11. You may have been made familiar with this document, the PNAC document, Rebuilding America's Defences. On page 2, PNAC is a project to promote American global leadership. On page 63, it says, the process of transformation of the US military, even if it brings revolutionary change, is likely to be a long one, absent some catastrophic catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. People familiar with that? Have they heard of this? Yeah? There's a few nods. Okay. And then the people talk about Operation Northwoods, about this. They were going to send up a plane and then shoot it down, blame it on people. And this sort of thing. Somebody that I know looked at this document and they noticed that he uses the word holiday rather than the word vacation, which was odd because it was meant to be an American document. So is that itself disinformation? I don't know, possibly. Now, events on 9/11. Three buildings were destroyed, were completely destroyed outright. Several others were severely damaged, and eventually the whole center was, whole World Trade Center complex was destroyed. Now, I'd like to ask you a simple question just to start off. Would you say that building is collapsing?
No.
Right. Any sort of thoughts as to what you might be doing?
The stuff is going upwards and outwards.
Okay. And what is that stuff that's going upwards and outwards? What does it look like?
Some of it's huge.
Well, actually, as you'll see in a moment, there weren't all that many huge beams. There were some, but actually some of them turned to dust before they hit the ground. Not all of them, but some of them did. Here's a plate. I've got a plate. I might have to click this with my mouse. Click my mouse on this. Should have set this up properly, but I didn't. If you watch carefully, you'll see some of these pieces actually turning to dust before they've even hit the ground. And you can see a trail of dust coming from behind them. Mm-hmm. But even more extraordinarily, in a moment you're going to see a few shots of this thing here. Mm. This is 70 stories of unsupported steel. It's come to be known as the spire. And you see that remain standing for, I don't know, 7 or 8 seconds after the main building has disappeared. And then you can see it turn to dust before your very eyes. And I've got about 5 or 6 shots of this.
That's enough.
Now, you know, you've got to convince yourself of this. I'm telling you this. What if I'm not right? You must go and look at this for yourselves. Go and watch it again when you get home if you can access it. And see if you agree with me.
Where was that last bit from with the spire? The video?
It was the central, one of the central sections of Tower 2, I believe. Tower 2 is the second one to go down.
It's obvious a plane hit it, isn't it?
Sorry?
It's obvious a plane hit it, isn't it?
We'll come to the planes in a bit. But you'll see, he zooms in on this a little bit, you'll see this segment turning to dust before your very eyes. So this is a problem because the official story says the building collapsed due to fires and gravity. Well, we don't really see any flames in that shot. You can see the building burning a bit before this happened. But in that actual shot, there's really not a lot of evidence of either of any fire, any bright lights of explosions. You know, we've had various stories now about the World Trade Center that you may or may not be familiar with. The official story is fire plus gravity. We've had thermite, which I'll talk a lot more about later if I get time. Thermite is a very hot yellow-orange reaction, which takes a bit of a time to start it. We've had nuclear explosions, there's another story that came out more recently. And then we've had harm as well as possible. So that's probably the clearest shot, I think, there. Well, you can see this thing, because you've got the blue sky in the background, so you can clearly see.
Interesting, the black smoke at the top and this so white at the bottom.
Right.
What's that?
Right. Good observation. These are the things that I'd like people to look at. Go and look at the details, because that's where you find the truth, in the details.
Sorry, Andrew, what was this fire? What part did it play in
the building? We've seen it again with a sequence of stills. It was some of the central core columns of Tower Number 2.
Okay.
And I'll show you what, you know, you've probably seen the pictures of the inside of the World Trade Center. I'll show you those again shortly.
What were they made of?
Steel.
And that's what's supposed to have
steel turned
thermite.
Yeah, according to the thermite crew.
So that would be fizzing like a...
Well, in theory, I mean, you know, if you watch the thermite reaction on YouTube, as we were discussing it in your kitchen.
But steel can't turn to dust without going through the molten state.
Can't it?
Well, can it?
Can you see any evidence of heat there?
No, I can't.
Right. So what we're looking at is something that turns steel to dust without going through the molten state. The only thing that I know that can do
nuclear.
That...
Nuclear?
Possibly. But not a nuclear explosion, because that involves heat, not a conventional
neutron.
Nuclear explosion. Who knows?
No, neutron only affects living things.
Yeah, a neutron is a neutral particle. It doesn't turn things to dust.
That's right.
Now, just a quick look at building number 7. 47-storey steel building. And that was a debris pile. I'm going to show you one that Dr. Wood posted. This debris pile has hardly gone across the street. This is a very, very tightly controlled demolition. Mm. Hardly gone across the street. Now, we saw the spire turning to dust, but actually what happened is the entire building has turned to dust. They didn't burn down, they didn't fall down. And if you read Dr. Judy Wood's book, or go and look at her website, or listen to the interviews that she's done, you'll hear her describe all the evidence. There was a very small seismic signal, I think about 2.3 or 2.6, which was equivalent to about a 20 or 30 storey building falling to the ground. But this picture here, we know when this picture was taken roughly. Well, we know it was taken before 5:20 in the evening, because this is building number 7. And we know that building number 7 was destroyed at 5:20 in the evening. So here we have the World Trade Center. And Dr. Wood put these markers on. He stole this image shamelessly off her PowerPoint presentation. So you can see here, this is an 8-story building, which is that one. We know that this was taken before 5:20 in the evening. Ah, they must have gotten really quick to take that steel to China, because they'd done it by about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So what, 4 hours after the destruction? And there is no building left, almost no building, obviously exaggerated slightly. You know, there's some bits of steel on the ground, there's biggest things sticking up. And there's other bits and pieces that we'll see in a few of the other pictures. But essentially, there is almost no building left. It looks like approximately 85%, and that's being conservative,
what's
of the buildings we've got.
I've heard a counter-argument, and I'm not saying I have any sympathy with it, but that there was
Some basement
underneath, and it just
The basements, I'll come to that. So this is building number 6, and I mean, look at this. Looks like it does literally look like a nuclear bomb has gone off. Looks like that level of conflagration, doesn't it? Yes. But this building is completely intact. So how can this scale of destruction have happened, but yet this building is undamaged just across the street, for heaven's sake? This is the World Financial Center. Okay, coming back to that, but I just want to talk about how I got involved with this very quickly. When I first, the thing that tipped me off was the freefall. The buildings came down at freefall speed, right? Mm. So, you know, you look at this, I did this rough approximation. This was what was in the George Humphrey film. I'll just quickly skip through this. You can basically prove, well, you look at the construction, this is what I was talking about before. 236 exterior steel columns, 47 interior steel columns, all of that was essentially gone, apparently in 8 or 10 seconds for each of those towers. Gone. Nothing. You know, down to just this little, if you look at this framework at the bottom here, that's basically all that was left. The rest of it, gone. History in 10 seconds. Pancake story I've talked about a little bit already. In other words, if these floors fell onto one another, you'd have a pile of floors at the bottom, 120 feet high. You've already seen from the picture that pile was nowhere near 120 feet high universally around that site. It was perhaps 30 foot high in some areas and 0 feet high in other areas. And again, all of these pictures are in Dr. Wood's book, but again, go and check it. Check that I'm not being selective with these pictures, you know, and I'm not just showing you the ones that support my story, as it were. Go and check it. But this is on the BBC website, it was, and they said that fire reached 800 degrees, melts of steel, and the floors fall down because of the melted steel. But remember, even if that were true, you only have fire in one portion of the tower, so all those other 60 floors down here were still strong because there was no fire there. Mm. So the story is completely bogus. And again, you would have some building. If the building fell down through gravity, fire, or thermite, or whatever, there would still be a building on the ground when it fell, by whatever method it fell. So I got into this and I looked at the equations of motion. This is a, you know, what I did in my physics classes. S equals ut plus half a t squared, that's the equation of motion. You reduce that to free fall, s equals a half a t squared. So you work that out for the law of gravity, which is acceleration due to gravity, which is 9.81 meters per second. And you come out with a figure that the tower should have come down in about 9 seconds. So the tower did indeed come down at free fall speed. And as Eric Hofschmidt has said, it is impossible for a building to fall through itself as quickly as it falls through thin air. It's physically impossible. It's obvious when you think about it. I just did the numbers. And I posted this on Physics Forum, and that's, I think somebody on the Scholars Group read this Physics Forum, and that's just more of what I just said. And they invited me to join the Scholars for 9/11 Truth. And I had a friend when this came about, and we talked about this, and he said, oh, Scholars for 9/11 Truth, that's the logo, isn't it? I said, yeah. So, oh, that's dodgy, that is, mate. Let's go up with my slight talk. I said, nah, that's alright. You know, being naive as I was. Okay, so then I got involved with the Scholars Forum and got invited.
What's wrong with that logo? I didn't get that. What was wrong with the logo?
Masonic torch. It's a Masonic symbol.
It's more like the Tory torch.
Sorry, yeah, it is quite similar to the Tory torch.
I thought it was a big flame, you know.
Similar again.
Yeah, it's a Masonic symbol. And you'll see it again shortly as well. Now, this Stephen E. Jones character, which some people in the audience might have heard of, he's a physicist from Brigham Young University, and he invited me to join the Scholars Group in email in 2005. And I helped him create a video about thermite, because I thought this guy was legitimate. He was from a, you know, real university. He invited me to join the group. They invited me to join as a full member, even though I don't have any advanced degrees. I've only got a Bachelor of Science degree in Computer Science and Physics. It's not Master's or a PhD or anything. I made a DVD of Jones's presentation, which was given in February 2006, and if I get time, I'll come back to an image he used in that. I corresponded with one or two other members, such as Kevin Ryan, who's also been involved with some stuff recently. Kevin Ryan is formerly of Underwriters Labs, who were involved in doing the NIST reports. And Kevin Ryan spoke out against his bosses, who glossed over issues related to the testing of the WTC steel for fire tolerance. I made a presentation of one of his. So I got involved in this group and I tried to make a positive contribution to it. I thought this group, because it was a group of scholars getting together to question the story of 9/11, I thought they gained a bit of traction, and they seemed to. They did a few press releases. And then Steve Jones published this so-called scientific paper about thermite, so-called. And other papers were published, and then Dr. Woods published the billiard ball example, which was like the free fall, but it was kind of much more illustrative, much more complete analysis than I had done with my free fall. So this billiard ball, the BBE, that was first published in June or July 2005, and it was sort of somewhat similar, more elegant than my thing that I showed you with the equations and that. And that was presented by Dr. Wood at an engineering conference in June 2006, so we seem to be getting some, you know, interest in that. Let's see. And so I thought the thermite thing was legit, and you know, this plain question was, I didn't think was that important, really. I used to say what other people said, well, it doesn't matter what did these things, you know, we just need to agree that the official story is false. I used to say things like that. I don't say that anymore. It's very important that we know exactly what happened. It's a bit like saying, well, it doesn't really matter who killed that bloke, you know, we know he's dead, you know, we don't really want to get the guy who did it, you know, it doesn't matter, you know.
So isn't it the difference between saying that guy's dead and that guy was murdered? Most
right.
people just think, oh, the guy died and that's
right.
gorgeous.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah,
We're at least trying to say, no, the guy was murdered.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
start
yeah.
there
exactly.
and then work
exactly.
from that.
But you know, also, what weapon was he? Oh, that doesn't matter because, you know what I mean? Mm. He was murdered, that's all we need to know. You know. Okay, well,
George Herbert pushes for a land war against Iraq. But polls show the US public is split 50-50 on that idea. Then comes this eyewitness testimony before a congressional committee from a 15-year-old Kuwaiti girl. The claim is she cannot be identified for fear of reprisals.
While I was there, I saw the Iraqi soldiers come to the hospital with guns. They took the babies out of incubators. Took the incubators and left the children to die on the cold floor.
The U.S. public is outraged. The result? Support for land war zooms. It's a turning point. Desert Storm is launched. 135,000 Iraqis are killed. An estimated 1 million Iraqis, many of them children and old people, then die as a result of 10 years of sanctions. One small problem. There never were any incubator baby deaths. Not one. The Canadian Broadcasting Corporation's investigative flagship program, The Fifth Estate, reveals the girl to be the Kuwaiti ambassador's daughter, given her lines and coached in acting by the giant American PR firm Hill & Knowlton. It's one phase in a $10 million joint U.S.-Kuwaiti campaign of deception. This man is lying.
I myself buried 14 newborn babies that had been taken from their incubators.
Reading from the script.
This man is lying. They had kids in incubators, and they were thrown out of the incubators so that Kuwait could be systematically dismantled.
There were a lot of people who participated in a conspiracy. Yes, an out-and-out conspiracy.
So that's one example of the media just broadcasting a fake story. Here's another one. John Costello and others have closely analysed the film taken by Abraham Zapruder of the JFK assassination. As everyone else, I assume this film was genuine. It really did show Kennedy being shot, just as the film claimed. And of course it kind of did, but there are some, again, some details which I was alerted to by this study. The film was not released until about a year after Kennedy died, sometime in sort of late 1964. And that film only contains 500 frames in its whole length, which isn't really all that many. Now, Costello documents on the Great Zapruder Film Hoax at least 6 mistakes in the film. I've got a couple of them here. Now, I won't read out all the text, but basically, if you look at this one here, just for example, start with this one, watch the secret agent's head, and you'll see that what he looks backwards and then he looks forwards, and when he turns from the back to the front of the car, it's almost instantaneous. There is almost no delay. And the same that this woman's head sort of turns funnily as well, if you watch her head, and you'll see she goes like that, she swings her head really fast, unnaturally fast. I'll just leave that running so you can sort of satisfy yourself that that's what it really is being shown. You can see it in large increment at the top or the bottom. Okay, everyone seen that? Mm-hmm. Happy that there's something not quite right there?
Just can't let you see that, I'm sorry.
But you just got to look at the secret agent's head, and you'll see he looks towards the back now, and then boom, straight forward. If you measure the speed of that, it's faster than a human head is physically capable of turning.
I totally disagree.
Well, that's according to the study.
Sorry. Right?
But let me go on from this. It's okay, if you disagree, that's fine. But this is another example. The wound mistake, the Zapruder film is telling us that the whole front top of JFK's head gets blasted away. There is a huge crater where his forehead used to be, through which we can see his wife. This would make sense if he was indeed hit by a high-velocity rifle bullet from behind. There is only one problem with this. Everyone who saw the president after the shooting said that his face was not injured or damaged at all. The JFK autopsy photograph surfaced in the late 1980s and showed his face to be completely intact. Even the skeptics had to agree that either the Zapruder film or the autopsy photos or both have to be forgeries. So again, there are 6 mistakes in that film, and I suggest if you want to review this, you go to Assassination Science and look at that. But the reason why that film was, you think, why did we need to fake that? I mean, you know, what's that got to do with Lee Harvey Oswald? I mean, if he was the shooter, how does this affect things? The point was that if you go and read the witness accounts from Dealey Plaza, they say that the car slowed down and it stopped momentarily, and the shots were heard, and then the driver put his foot down and sped off. If you watch the Zapruder film, it shows the car in continuous motion. All right? The reason being that it looked like frames were deleted to the car appeared to be in continuous motion. What you get then is you've discredited all the witnesses in Dean Plaza who claim the car stopped. Right? So you've then got a dichotomy in the story. Is the film, the camera never lies, for the film must be right, therefore the witnesses to this event are bad observers and they're unreliable.
What is the, is that the exit hole of a bullet in his
proton, the Adam's apple? It's consistent with what's being shown in the film. And the film itself...
Except for all that blood at the front, and look where that blood's coming from.
Well, I don't know.
Up here, look, it's going up.
Right. But, I mean, what I'm saying is that if you look at the...
What he shot in the neck is what I'm saying, the front is what I'm saying.
Right. But if you look at what the witnesses said, it disagrees with what the film said. And that's why I think we faked it.
Just one point I wanted to make, is it would have been shooting on probably a standard 8 camera. If it was early 60s, Super 8 came out.
Yeah.
In 65, standard 8 was a clockwork camera.
Right.
Unless the film ran slower after you wound it up, you may be shooting less frames per second, and that could have equalised the movement.
Well, I haven't looked into all the technical detail. I'm giving you that as an example. If you want to go and study it, as I understand things, sure. I think it came out a year after Kennedy was shot. So it wasn't like released a week after, it was a year after. And I think it came out after Jim Garrison got involved. Okay, so I'm going to move on to this one of the controversial topics that nobody wants to talk about, and suspect why the people here decided to leave, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Because
they left us, we grabbed them off the street, they weren't.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, those three, so don't worry about that.
Okay.
They were freaking out, okay.
Very good. okay. What? No big bones at the World Trade Center, that's ridiculous. Most sincere researchers, 9/11 researchers, agree planes crashed at the World Trade Center. I've read that in Laura Knight Yadsick's book, 9/11 Ultimate Truth. That's what she says, or Joe Quinn says. I don't know whether it's her or Joe Quinn. One says that on page 93, I think it is. So, I'm sorry folks, I'm not a sincere researcher. So, you're looking at somebody who isn't sincere. So, we all saw the planes, yeah? We saw it on the videos. I think there's 42 of them. We saw the Norde footage of the first impact, which was discovered the next day. We saw multiple videos of the second impact, as I say, I think 42 or I think several more may have been released now because of the NIST release. So what are you saying, that these weren't real planes? Were they computer graphics? Were they holograms? The public will never believe me. No. I shouldn't be talking about this because I'm going to damage the truth campaign. I'm going to damage the truth movement by telling you about the evidence. I shouldn't talk about this, everyone. That's what's been said to me, well, not to me personally. But things like that, and that's what you'll read if you go on the forums. To find the truth, you have to keep looking at the evidence. You look at physical laws. You look at the softness and hardness of materials. What does the data say, as Richard Feynman, the physicist, says? So let's try and have a look at some of the data. Here's some. So we have a problem. The plane impact, and that's not the only one. There are a number of problems with plane story. This is another one. These are the official pictures from the NIST reports, which are meant to be wreckage near the World Trade Center in plane. Now, this tire doesn't look in great shape, but this one looks in pretty good shape. So how can this survive without significant burning or damage? Particularly, as in both cases, we didn't see any large parts of the plane break off before impact. If you watch a Formula One car crash or something like that, you will typically see parts of the car break off and fly across the track. We didn't see anything like that with the planes from the World Trade Center. We have still images to see it showing no bits of plane, nothing coming down. Literally, the planes are absorbed into the building. Now, people argue this all kinds of ways because they don't want to accept the truth. As I see it, they say, well, it was travelling so fast that it penetrated the building and there was a vacuum of air created, that's why we didn't see the fireball initially, that all got sucked into the building and exploded in the building, and on. And they overlook things like, well, it's actually very difficult to fly a Boeing at 700 feet above sea level at 500 miles an hour, which is the official speed. I think 524 was one, 546 was another. The Boeing would shake itself to bits at 700 feet above sea level because the air is thicker. Okay, well, the clip that you saw was filmed by Michael Herzakhanov. The one that said CNN on it wasn't CNN.
Herzakhanov, please.
My name's Jeff.
Jeff? Hi. My name is Jeffrey Hill. The reason I was calling you was because weren't you the one who took the video of the plane hitting the tower on 9/11?
Yes, sir.
And I was just wondering, I was just doing, like, for a memorial of the 9/11, I was putting together a little video. And I was just wondering, whereabouts were you when you took the video?
Who is this?
Jeffrey Hill.
From where?
I live in Canada. Sault Ste. Marie, Canada.
And were you in the television?
No, I'm just a normal person. I was a student. I was just doing a little film, my mini film for a class.
Hey, that comes in and get that information. I'm not about to give it, you know.
Oh, were you working for CNN at the time you took it or something?
Just call it.
This picture was taken on the 25th of October. This is a satellite picture. Dr. Jeannie Wood discovered this when she was looking for these circular holes in the tops of the buildings, which is a hole in the story. So this piece of wreckage appears to have been planted. So that's another little data point. That's what I'm saying. That pit appears to have been planted. Now, this is another difficult one for the plane huggers, as some of them have been termed. People want to believe that the plane hit the World Trade Center. See, you have to think about materials and why things are made of what they're made of. Planes are made of light materials so that they will fly. Buildings are made of hard materials so that they won't fall down or break easily. Planes, by definition, do not go through buildings. You can see here, steel girders have been severed, apparently by quarter-inch aluminium wing struts or carbon fibre tubes, or some combination thereof. Apparently, according to some people, because they were travelling at 500 miles an hour, which, as I've already explained, is extremely unlikely. Apparently there were fires, hot fires in here, which burned the buildings down. If I go back to this previous picture, we have Edna Cintron here, clinging on for dear life, apparently not being burned by what she's holding on to, which is very close to the impact site. So see, only, what, 30 feet away, probably less, 20 feet away, near the fire. So how can aluminium and light materials crash through solid steel girders? Why did anybody ever bother to develop armour-piercing bullets? Surely you can just fire an aluminium instrument at sufficient velocity and it will go through anything. What would happen if you fired a .44 Magnum bullet, denser and faster than a Boeing's wing, at a steel girder? Would it go through it, or would it ricochet off? I think you'd find it would be the latter and not the former.
Hasn't it going to make quite a bit of difference with it being full of fuel?
No.
There's a lot more weight behind it.
No, because that would just... whatever's holding the fuel would break
would
open, the fuel would come
the
out.
Fuel out.
And then the fuel would burn off.
Impact.
And how can the plane remain sealed so that it doesn't explode? I already showed you that video.
Are those actually steel girders, or are they just some kind of fascia?
We've got a fascia of aluminium, but then beneath that you've got steel girders.
Right, yeah, no doubt about that. But just that, those outside strips, just the...
Right, they're aluminium, yeah. I don't know how thick they are, but yes, they are aluminium.
I've just thought of something too, which I never thought of before. The nose of the plane would obviously have just completely concertina on hitting that, but why then didn't the wings just
and
burst?
And why are the nose pieces of plane...
The
you
fuel
get to see some
outwards.
Why aren't there some pieces of plane hanging out? A bit of wing strut, a bit of engine, a bit of engine cover. There is no debris at all that's recognisable hanging out.
But I mean, you'd have thought that the kerosene would have been just catapulted out backwards, wouldn't you? When you look at the massive steel girders there.
So, and then, this is what I did. This is my original piece of research, because in 2005, a set of 500 witness accounts were released by the New York Times. It's called the World Trade Center Oral Histories Project, or the Witness Project. I can't remember the name of it. And you can go and download all these accounts yourself. And I convert them all into a big text file. I managed to establish that at least 96 witnesses out of these first responders, these were the people who went there and pulled them out of the wreckage and helped people who were injured, emergency medical technicians, fire personnel of various types. I established that there were 96 out of these 500 that were at, within half a mile, to say within there, the misprint, at the time of second impact, and a further 21 witnesses were inside one of the WTC buildings at the time of this second impact. This gave a total of 117 witnesses who were near or inside the World Trade Center building. You can read all the witness accounts, you can go and study it, I've put all the data on my website. It's perfectly happy to go and peer review it, whatever you want to do. It's all there for you if you want to go and wade through it as I did. It took me about 2 weeks to do this. It's not an easy task. Only 19 of the witnesses actually reported seeing plane 2 before impact. 19 out of that total of 117. So that's 20% of witnesses saw the second plane. Only 20 of the witnesses reported actually hearing the plane, which I think is even more unusual. Only 8 of the witnesses near the World Trade Center reported actually seeing and hearing the plane before impact. But that I found very interesting to statistic. It doesn't kind of prove anything like conclusively. But then you go and read some of the accounts and some very strange things come out. In fact, there are a lot of strange things in witness accounts that people don't like talking about. This is one example. File 9110114. And again, you can go and download this from the New York Times website, read the account yourself. At that time, Chief Ganshi was behind me and he thought there was another explosion in the North Tower. That's when I turned around and said, "Chief, listen, there was a second plane that hit the other tower." He was like, "No, no, no, we have another explosion." I said, "No, Chief, I witnessed it. I watched the plane hit the other tower." He was like, "Are you sure?" I said, "Yes." I said, "Chief, I'm 100% positive I watched the second plane hit the tower." So these two guys are stood next to each other. They can't agree that the plane hit the tower. We start heading down the block, and we get down to a guess about Church Street, and the second plane hit, and I remember just being underneath. I never heard the motor of the plane, the sound of the engines. We just heard the explosion, you felt the explosion, and looking straight up and seeing that fireball that you see on the news, but we're underneath looking up there. And there are several accounts like this, and there are other accounts which said, "I didn't even know planes were involved in this incident until I saw it on the news when I got home." So, it's a very strange story when you look at these witness accounts, and some of them conflict. I mean, I've got a friend in Canada, and I've talked about this with him, and he says he knows somebody who ended up under a piece of landing gear outside the World Trade Center. So, these things conflict. A bit like the Zapruder film thing that I showed you. Witness statements conflict. Some witnesses swear they saw planes, like the TV reporter. Some say they didn't see a plane. Stories about black box recovery conflict as well. So some stories at the World Trade Center say 3 were recovered, some say none were recovered. Depends on what you read. So we've got all these conflicted stories. But you can't argue with the fact that steel is harder than aluminium. You can't argue what building is made of and what plane is made of. Okay, but there's a lot more. I've gone through this very quickly. There's a lot of other stuff that's been done on this. I've got a DVD called September Clues, which goes into some of the video archive, a lot more details, an hour and a half long. If you want to have a copy of that, I've got some copies in there, 50 minutes. But just say, let's say the whole plane story is a fake, you might find that difficult to take in, that's up to you. But let's just say that was the correct debate. It would mean there were no hijackers, which explains the surviving hijackers. It explains the anomalies of passenger lists, because there weren't really any passengers as such. That's another bit of story which is in the second Loose Change film as well, about how, what they did with the passengers. I'll just come to the end of this. Explains the flight anomaly as well. For example, there's this NTSB data that you can get, and it says that the plane never hit the Pentagon, it flew over the top, and that's from the NTSB. If there were no planes, it explains why that, you know, that wasn't real data. Explains the fake NORAD tape, which came out thinking about 2005. Might not be familiar.
Can I just ask you, explain surviving hijackers? Who are these people?
If you've gone to the BBC website, you'll see that the six of the hijackers were reported alive several days after 9/11. And they, you know, they were accused of being involved in 9/11. Said, no, I'm not involved. I work for so-and-so airlines. I work in, you know, as an oil worker or something. It's on the BBC website. Indicates another layer of cover-up, because architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, which I mentioned a bit about, they maintained the planes hit the World Trade Center. I say, no, they didn't. I don't know what did hit the World Trade Center. That's a different question. But I know it wasn't real Boeings. So I think what happened is, there was a number of military exercises going on 9/11. Webster Tarfley has written about this. That also happened on 7/7. You've heard of Peter Power recording. Come around, yeah, so sit here, it's fine. Some general or high-up military person, he says, four hijacked planes are in the air, you better do something. NORAD, FAA and everyone else spend 1 or 2 hours looking for them, but they're not there. Nothing is scrambled, because here there was a stand down, so that's why there was nothing scrambled, because there was an ordered a military stand down. But what if that's disinformation? What if there wasn't a stand down, it's just that there were no real planes, there were no targets to launch planes at. They haven't detected them. Everyone feels bad because these non-existent planes have managed to destroy the World Trade Center and part of the Pentagon, etc. We find at all three sites in common, there are witness accounts of seeing planes, but there's no wreckage of planes on the ground, no significant wreckage, not in line with what there should be anyway. And there are no serial numbers that have ever been put into an official inquiry, any serial numbers of plane parts. So that's one side of it. So let's see. If planes didn't destroy the World Trade Center, then what did? That's the question we now move on to. Now, we talked about...
Sorry, Andrew, before you move on, you said there are no planes there. Is there any... Because of all the world's sort of media were focused on the towers after the first hit, presumably.
Right.
Is there no sort of long-distance film of the area, you know, or second plane approaching?
Well, that's covered in September Clues, and you'll see that there is, I think there are, there was one live shot broadcast from the Fox 5 chopper which shows the second plane impact, right? And I think there's another live shot from somewhere else of the second plane impact. And there's one that was on NBC as well, with the ball, and this, Richard Hall's done this ball analysis. This object that looks like a ball. So there's that you can watch.
But there's no actual film of a plane approaching New York from...
No, not from a long way away, no. But the other thing is as well, just to add on to what I just said about that, what you've got is, you've got the first, as you said, the first plane hit. We must have had, at least one news crew would have got down to the World Trade Center after the first impact. I suspect there were quite a few more. I don't know exactly how many there were. But all the images from the ground, yeah, of the second impact were from outer people. There's no recognised camera of any of the news networks on the ground of the second impact, which to me is very suspicious. But yes, there are shots from the air, but that again is covered in September.
Wouldn't you think that there would be footage both ways, either way?
Yeah.
Like, surely there'd be hundreds of people with their mobile phones.
Well, there are 42. There are at least 42, which you can go look at Kiltown's site. You've got all 42 videos there. Right? I don't know what's on those videos, I just know it's not a real plane. Right? That's all I can tell you that I know for sure. I know it wasn't a real plane. I can't say what it was, but I know it wasn't a real plane. I can give you some ideas about what it might have been, but I don't know what it actually was. So we go back to this picture. Again, the steel was all taken to China. As we go, it was taken to China by about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Pretty sharp work. The ambulance is at ground level. Where's the building? Yeah, we see some debris here. Oh look, the building exploded, yet somehow it managed to compact itself into the 9 levels below the World Trade Center, didn't it? As you can clearly see. You can see this is full of building, which is why these guards aren't able to walk around, and why there isn't a puddle of water in the bottom, because it's full of building. It's full of the 110 stories, which they ain't into it. Oh look, the basements are full of building. We know they're full of building. There's no room to walk around in there. In fact, figures were retrieved from the mall stores, from the Warner Brothers stores. Figures were retrieved. Bugs Bunny and a couple of others. They're on Dr. Wood's website, those pictures. Things you may have come across in passing that people don't want to talk about. This is about a quarter or a half a mile from the World Trade Center on FDR Drive, Franklin D. Roosevelt Drive. Oh, well, there's obviously some type of car fire there going on at the same time. Car fire, was it? Well, looks to be very, very high heat there. Oh, look, we have an inflated tyre. Why is this very, very high heat yet an inflated tyre? This looks like some type of heat damage or something, yet the upholstery is intact.
Isn't that what happens to people that spontaneously combust?
Well, that's an interesting connection.
That's not heat damage, it's rust. He damaged the paint and blister. That's rust.
Interesting you mentioned rust.
What is this rust? That's heat damage.
That tire looked okay. What caused the heat damage to this though? This is a fire truck parked opposite the World Trade Center. What caused the oxygen tanks on the back of the truck to explode before the towers came down? Go and read the witness accounts that I talked about and hear the firemen talking about that. Their oxygen tanks exploding from the fire trucks. This truck looks like it's seriously damaged on the inside, but the outside is not in too bad shape. These are all in the book, and there's a lot more besides, 500 pages. As you say, that's rust. And still, this was taken on, I think, September the 12th or 13th, this picture. Again, you'd have to go onto Dr. Wood's website to get the exact date. She just referenced these pictures, where she got them from. What caused all this rusting? Very, very rapid rusting. This is a couple of days after 9/11. See, it's a Pepsi-Cola van. Oh dear. Oh dear. Really, now we're into the ones that nobody wants you to think about much. There was a big gust of wind when the towers came down, which managed magically to leave the leaves on the trees, but inverted this fire truck, that car, that car, that car, and that one stayed the right way up. Looks, oh dear, we have another problem here. Looks like a bomb went off. That's of course what happened. The World Trade Center coming down was like a bomb going off. So all this damage, you don't need to think about it. It's just stuff coming across from the explosion of the World Trade Center that did all this damage. But hang on, look at the detail. One pane is not broken. This stone material, whatever it is, marble, granite, I don't know what it is, I'm not a bloody architect. That's all in reasonably good shape. This is all gone. This was blue marble here, but that's all completely gone. Selective effects on materials. How odd.
Is that a building opposite?
Yes, that's the World Financial Center, just across the road from where the World Trade Center was.
Can I just ask you what happened to it? Because I'm not quite sure.
It was destroyed using an energy weapon. The World Trade Center block complex. Same again. One pane broken. The other one, not. Dirt, landfill somehow put onto the debris that was on the ground, this sort of soil was put on, bottles and stuff in it, looks like somebody brought in some landfill. It's even on the fire truck. This is 2 or 3 days after the event. We have pictures of dirt being brought into the site in trucks, like oil type dirt. It's even on the World Trade Center 7, we've got this odd fuming going on. So what we're actually talking about here, folks, is directed energy weapons, because Dr. Judy Wood, when she studied this, So this is an energy effect that I'm observing. I'm going to print it a bit more. I'd like to cover this in more time, but I've got a lot of time. And she came to the point, well, this is an energy effect. There's some type of energy weapon used here. So she'd never heard of this. She'd never heard of energy weapons. And she thought, well, what is this? Is there such a thing as an energy weapon in the world? Believe it or not, there is. Here's a website called the Directed Energy Professional Society, www.dept.org. So there are such things as directed energy weapons, and I've got another video clip, not in this presentation, about Donald Rumsfeld being asked about directed energy weapons in 2003, and he's extremely uncomfortable in talking about them with General Myers, who was the head of the Chief of Staff, whatever they call it. Now, we believe that NIST, there were two, really, well, several 9/11 reports. One of them was produced by the 9/11 Commission. It's described by David Ray Griffin, who I don't have a lot of respect for, but I like his description of this. 571 page wide. There were also 10,000 pages of reports, technical reports, produced by NIST, the National Institute for Standards and Technology. All right? You can download those 10,000 pages of reports from their website, and I did this. Now, NIST is like, sort of like our Department of Trade and Industry, apparently. I think that's the closest thing we've got. Now, in writing those 10,000 pages of reports, they used 23 different contractors, different companies. This is all, you know, go check this all out, it's on their website, list all the contracts that were given out. And, curiously, there were three defence contractors which were involved in writing reports. Two were actually paid by NIST to write reports: Science Applications International Corporation and Applied Research Associates. Applied Research Associates is one of the founding members of the Directed Energy Professional Society. How odd. Science Applications International Corporation and Boeing all do research or development of directed energy weapons. It's not a conspiracy theory, that's a fact. Oh look, Norman Mineta. Well, I'm not just taking this slide along, but people may be familiar with Norman Mineta. He's often cited as a 9/11 truther because he accused Cheney of refusing a shoot-down order on the Pentagon plane, hence implicating Cheney in letting the Pentagon attack happen. Some of you may be familiar with that clip, I don't know. You can go and watch it on that. I've got my actual clip, but I'm short of time, so I'm not going to play it. But Norman Mineta, let's see. Prior to joining President Bush's administration as Secretary of Transportation, Secretary Mineta served as US Secretary of Commerce under President Clinton. He was the only official held over between the two administrations. And prior to that, he was Vice President of Lockheed Martin Corporation. Look what they do. Oh look, the airborne laser, America's first directed energy weapon. Ooh. Anyway, Dr. Judy Wood said, look, there's some directed energy stuff going on here. I'd better write to one of the experts on this, which is the Directed Energy Director at Curtin Air Force Base in the USA. And she wrote to them and said, look, here's my pictures, here's my research. Tell me about directed energy, please. And Rich Garcia wrote back and said, you report phenomena that we cannot explain here. This was in relation to the study of the World Trade Center evidence. Either because we don't have enough data or because the phenomena are not within our area of expertise. The Kirtland AFB did not say, what are you talking about this for? Al-Qaeda did it, we know that. Which is odd. So they were being not entirely non-committal, but it's quite an interesting response. So what Dr. Judy Wood did was, in the USA there is a law called the Data Quality Act. NIST had produced, they'd taken public money, they'd been given $16 million by Congress to do these 10,000 pages of reports, right? So they paid this $16 million to the contractors who took public money to write those reports. If, as a company, you write a report in the USA, you can be sued under the Data Quality Act if your report is found to be in error and that you don't correct it. So Dr. Judy Wood says wrote to NIST, you must correct your report because I know it's fraudulent, it's incorrect. And she wrote to them, and she also wrote an appeal. World Trade Center report, you can see request for correction, that hers was filed on March the 16th, and supplements were filed on also on the same date. So she told them what she found in the evidence and why their 10,000 pages of report were wrong, or parts of them were wrong. Now, they basically wrote back to her and said, no, our reports are right, we're not going to change them, because we did not investigate the collapse of the World Trade Center. We only investigated the events up to the point of collapse. Yet the title of the reports was The Collapse of the World Trade Center Towers. So that was fraud on its face. So with that admission, she decided she would sue the contractors for fraud because NIST had refused to correct its reports. And so she sued the contractors for fraud in what's called the Keytown case. And that was done in April 2007, that's over 4 years ago. How many people have heard about this in this room? I wrote press releases about this, I posted it on 9/11 forums 4 years ago. September 2007, I wrote a press release, just about 4 years ago. No one in this room has heard of it.
She was successful then?
No. No, we didn't expect it would be successful. But the point is, this is not a conspiracy theory. You cannot go and start a court case based on a conspiracy theory. Now, you've probably heard about Thermite and things like that. Well, Stephen E. Jones and his group, and Richard Gage, I think, have got involved by this time. Richard Gage didn't come onto the scene until 2007, just after Dr. Woodfather's appeal, actually. They also submitted an RFC 3 weeks after Dr. Judy Wood. In other words, they also wrote to me saying, your report is wrong, you need to correct it. However, there is a problem with their request for correction, which I shall try and illustrate this with me. Just have to move to that chair. It's on your quest. I'm going to try and illustrate the problem to you with their RFC, because I've got a copy of their RFC and their appeal here. That's a search thing, which I'll use in a minute. There we go. So this, when it takes a few seconds just to load itself up. Oh, come on, let me hear yourself. So this is a copy. I appended their RFC and the appeal by Stephen E. Jones. You'll see Bob McElvain, Bill Doyle, Dr. Stephen Jones, Kevin Ryan. There's Kevin Ryan, you can read that. So this was their document. They said, oh, I'm Richard Gage, there he is. And they talk a lot about thermite. And they talk a lot about molten metal. Well, let's just search for the word molten, shall we, in their RFC to NIST. There we go. Oh, no instances of molten metal found in their document. Let's search for, let's say, Jones, just so that I'm actually searching the text. Oh, look, Stephen Jones, there it is, mentioned on those pages. So we do a new search. Let's do a search for thermite, shall we? Because they know that thermite did it, as you probably perhaps heard on the internet. Ah, we have three instances. Thermite residue tests. Well, let's go and look at that, shall we? Oh, look, thermite residue tests. If explosive residues are found in the new TCDs, an extreme likelihood that explosives were in fact used. Consider that Materials Engineering Inc. has shown this to say about its thermite residue tests. Oh. Well, if you go and look at this study, it's not from the World Trade Center, it's from an arson thing in 1996, an arson study. So they're referencing in their RFC, the only references to thermite, actually there's another one I'm going to show you in a minute, within this, references to somebody else's research. It's not Steve Jones's research that's referenced in this. Well, actually that's not technically speaking true. Now, when I first did this, I made a slight mistake when I looked at this document and I did what I've just shown you. You see, I've just clicked the word, saying the whole words only, and if I search again for the word thermite, in fact, I haven't picked it up. But somewhere in one of these documents, do that again. Well, somewhere in one of these documents, there is actually another occurrence of the word thermite, and it's in a link to Stephen E. Jones's so-called scientific paper. Now, I know I'm going into rather a lot of detail about this, but if you go onto the internet, the thing that you'll most commonly come across that destroyed the World Trade Center was some variation of thermite. Yet, the people that came out with that theory weren't prepared to put that in the legal framework, unlike my friend, who talked all about direct and energy damage. So we have a problem. Now, the court case, to answer your question, what happened to it? Well, the judge dismissed the first ruling, and in the first roundup, the judge's ruling dismissed it and he ruled on some technicalities, but in the ruling he mentioned the JFK assassination and the moon landing, which have nothing to do with what Judy Wood put in her document. It's all about the things that I've shown you, the energy effects, the holes in the buildings, the lack of building, the lack of seismic signature, and so on. That was all in that book, and on the website. And in 2009 there was an appeal hearing that was dismissed, but they dismissed it by saying they were going to ignore the law. They knew the law had changed, but they were going to ignore that law and change, and it's called the FEAR law, but again, I haven't got time to discuss that. So what we're looking at here, well, we've talked about energy in 9/11. Everyone thinks of 9/11 in a political paradigm, you know, Libya, Iraq, oil, you know, the terrorism, that sort of thing. What else is there in it, though? Well, I've talked about energy. What we're looking at is a new technology, actually probably a very old one. 9/11 wasn't a new Pearl Harbor, it was a new Hiroshima. It's a new type of weapon. Hiroshima was the first time the atomic bomb was shown to the public. 9/11 was the first time that this weapon, which is based on something called the Hutchinson effect, or something similar to that, I've got to be careful what I'm talking about here. It uses what's called free energy. Energy that comes out of a zero-point field or something like it, out of the quantum foam or whatever you want to call it. There's various names for it. Somebody knows all about this free energy, that you can get it from within the universe or however you want to describe it, and they've weaponized it already. Now, Dr. Wood catalogued all these strange phenomena, the upturned cars, the unburned paper, the strange holes in the glass where you have holes in one frame and not another, a whole range of them. And most of these phenomena, if not all of them, she found in a completely unrelated, apparently unrelated area, and that's in the experiments of John Hutchison. John Hutchison is a Canadian researcher who's been looking at Nikola Tesla's work, and he started doing this in 1979. Okay? And this is an experiment he set up. So this thing is about, I don't know, it's a couple of metres long, if that, maybe only a metre long. He was trying to reproduce this legendary thing called the Philadelphia experiment, basically by beaming this area with a combination of electric fields, magnetic fields, electrostatic fields, microwave energy, and he occasionally used a radioactive source. And he developed this tweaking technique over a period of about 20 years. So here we have this paper, and here we have these raging car fires, yet paper is not burning. Here we have this fireman. He seems to be walking very close to this fire. Isn't he worried his pants would come alive? We've got several instances of these, are just a couple of pictures, and there's a lot more of these strange fires, and there's some video of this as well from the World Trade Center. I encourage you to go and look for these yourself, or go to Dr. Wood's website to find them. So we've got weird fires. This is one of John Hutchison's experiments, and I've got a whole DVD about this, so if you want to have that DVD and find out about John Hutchison, I think he might be a nutcase or a faker. John Hutchison submitted an affidavit for Dr. Judy Wood's court case. In other words, he's prepared to put himself up for cross-examination about all this stuff. That's a 3-inch solid copper beam. That's a beam from the World Trade Center. This is a 9-inch bar that John Hutchison has beamed with his energy beams. I know it sounds sort of very silly what I'm saying, but there's a lot more detail I don't have time to go into. I've got the information in there if you want it, if you want to explore it. This is a beam from the World Trade Center held by WJE, and you can see this steel is kind of all rolled up. Like rolled up into a rolled up carpet type thing, as Dr. Wood has described it. We've got these layers peeling back. It's like metal has turned to jelly. In fact, John Hutchison calls it the jellification of metal. Oh, look at one of the other effects that John Hutchison has become famous for. Levitation. This is an experiment with a Red Bull can, as you can see, wobbling away whilst it's affected by this combination of interfering energy. It's an interference effect. We're talking about field effects. It's not a beam as such. It's interfering beams. And within this interfering beams is where you get these effects springing out. And John Hutchison notes, for example, that if he puts a Geiger counter near his experiment and he runs his equipment, the radioactive, the so-called background count, which is the cosmic ray radiation, it drops whilst he has his experiment running, and then after a time it comes back up to normal. So there's some type of nuclear effect going on, not in the conventional sense. Now people will dismiss that as a fake video. In fact, I've got a whole chapter in my book about that very thing. Flared cam, flared metal, apparently burnt appearance, looks quite similar to that on the hazmat film.
I'll mark it down, of course, discreet. and I picked up the camera just out of habit. And something in the back of my mind said, run, run, run. And never in 20 years of shooting in New York had I run from an assignment. But something in the back of my head just said, run. And as I hit the corner of Liberty Street, it was almost being picked up by a tornado. Almost being picked up by me. It was like being picked up with a black cloud. A black cloud had substance. It was like night, but it had a solid feel to it. It was like gravel, hot gravel, and just picked me up and tossed me about a block. I just, at one second I was running, and the next second I was airborne. And I lost my glasses, I lost my cell phone, I lost my pager, but managed to hold on to both cameras.
But it threw you for a block.
I was back down at Ground Zero last week and walked the area where I have a pretty good recollection of where I was and where I wound up. And it was just under a city block.
It was this blast of warm air. It wasn't hot. It was warm. And it picked me up and threw me up against the wall of the building.
You were picked up off the ground.
Physically picked up off the ground.
I remember an explosion. At that point, I got knocked out. I don't remember anything. Then I got up, and I looked out the window because the windows exploded, and the street below came in.
As well. Again, you can go and read the witness accounts. We have a link, at least a couple of accounts of levitation. So, what's going on? Rust effects. This is what John Hutchison created in his experiment. So, we have all these phenomena lining up. Skip over that part, so I've got time. We have ongoing effects. Bankers Trust Building. You think that this is opposite the World Trade Center, on the other side of the road to where the World's Financial Center was. You think, oh, that's, well, Andrew, that why there was a chunk of the World Trade Center crashed into it and did all this damage and fell down. Well, look again. This is actually bent outwards. The FEMA report for this building said there was no fire in the Bankers Trust Building, yet they had this picture in. This, presumably, could be paint, some type of coating. That's not a natural color for steel, as far as I can tell. How come? We know that steel conducts heat. How come this is all melting, but this paint is all intact? And what are these two little holes here? What caused the damage to this girder? Bankers Trust Bay, this was just after 9/11, they stripped out some of the floors and then they repaired it. Then they declared, I think soon after this repair had taken place, that the building had a mould infection. They took it down piece by piece at a cost of $70 million. I think it's just about all gone now.
You say mold infection?
Mold infection was the official explanation for a steel frame building. Mm. We've got this rust here in the central girder. This is from the Bankers Trust building. This is all in one floor. Now, one of the other things I want to show you, you've probably never heard of before, and this is where we've already gone into some outlandish territory. I've tried to describe this to people. I said, do you know what far out means? And I've tried to describe this to this guy. I'm not sure what you mean. And I explained to him, levitation, anti-gravity, energy effect. This is far out, folks. This is why it's so difficult. I appreciate that. You might think I'm some kind of nutter. Frankly, that's fine, you know. This is what the evidence shows you, and this is what the truth is, as I know. But Dr. Wood, she was looking at this, I think, this gentleman, momentum to the dust. Two, got black dust going one way, and this white coloured dust. I think this is a false coloured image, but nevertheless, we've got two types of plume here. Dr. Wood was very interested in this. Why were the fumes going different directions? Why were they different colours and so on? Why did the dust go into the upper atmosphere? Normally with a demolition, controlled demolition, the dust doesn't go up into the upper atmosphere. Here it did. There's something different about what happened to these buildings. Well, say she wanted to find out more about it. So, went for satellite pictures and that's what she found. That was taken on 9/11/01. That's Cape Cod. That's New York. That's a plume of material from the World Trade Center. You heard about this? It's got the shape of a pentacle. Hurricane Erin. We just had about Hurricane Irene. What about Hurricane Erin? It was barely reported on the morning news. Only two out of four, there were more reports of this, but they barely reported this hurricane. That weather map doesn't even show it. That one doesn't show it. These are from the morning of 9/11. And look what it did. I'm going to skip over some of this because we're short of time. Look what it did. This is the most interesting thing. It was the longest lasting hurricane of the 2001 season. It started classified on the 1st of September. Up to Bermuda by the 7th, did a bit of damage. CNN reported that damage. Oh look! Went in a straight line. Towards New York City. It's closest to New York City at 8 o'clock in the morning on 9/11. It made a right hand turn the next day and went off out towards Newfoundland. That's just coincidence, Andrew. Just get lost. It's just coincidence.
Right.
You know, this is far out, folks. Climate change, yeah, right. Who's? And that's an indication of the size of the storm. It reached its widest expanse in area on 9/11 too. Like they spun it up. Oh, did I say they spun it up? Who? I don't know who. I'll skip over this for some more data. So I wrote about that. I wrote a press release about that study because Dr. Wood's got a whole set up. She covers the whole hurricane study and all that. It's in the books, on the website. I wrote a press release about that. So I thought, hang on, people need to know about this hurricane. So even if it stayed outside New York, you get storm swells. And that's important for people to know about storm swells. Even if the storm doesn't come into shore, you know, because you get flooding from the storm swells, even if there's going to be no sort of damage. Because New York's at sea level, Manhattan's at sea level. So if you get storm swells, it's flooding risk. You flood in the tube system and all of that. Which I think almost happened with Hurricane Irene just recently. I wanted to post this on Op-Ed News, which is an alternative news website. They talk about 9/11. Dr. Wood does not follow any of the basic tenets of science. They refused to post my press release about the Hurricane Erin study, which is about 5 pages long. Such as performing experiments, collecting, analysing data. Where are graphs, tables and data? Well, they're all on the website and in the links from the press release. She is not a scientist, she is a crackpot. This is how the cover-up works. Let's see, I'm going to skip through this. Some bits about Brooklyn and stuff. Field effects. I want to show you a bit more data. This is the magnetometer trade. So we're talking about energy, we're talking about magnetic fields. This is another thing Dr. Judy Wood discovered. This is a magnetometer is an instrument which measures the variations in the Earth's magnetic field. She discovered that in the University of Alaska they have a set of magnetometers and you can download the data from them. If you look at this part here, we're going to zoom into this bit. We see a fairly regular trace, then we've got the events of 9/11 and you see all of the traces, you get a bit of disturbance in that trace from the Earth's magnetic field reading. We'll zoom into that section and we're going to zoom in some more. I'm just very quickly going to show you this. Oh look, exactly 8:46, we have this trace reaching its lowest point. What time would that be? Well, that's the time the plane hit the World Trade Center, folks. So was it a real plane? Well, I've already told you I don't think it was. In fact, I know it wasn't a real plane. This is extra confirmation. So, what I'm telling you is that black technology was used. We've got this totally undisclosed type of technology and it's been used in broad daylight and it's been covered up. And the fact that you've never heard, probably never heard any of this, I might be exaggerating slightly, but the fact that you've never heard any of this before I've just shown you it and you can go and check all this for yourself proves that the cover-up has been successful. However it's been done, the cover-up has worked very well. Because I've been talking about this, and Dr. Woods has, for 3 years. We started talking about this in early 2008. We're running out of time, black projects, that stuff about that. I just want to mention a bit about Stephen E. Jones. Forbes Scholars for 9/11 Truth and Justice. Torch again. Didn't submit the RFC. The spire, we've covered that. Steve Jones denies the spire. Steve Jones has denied that the buildings turned to dust. They have to try and deny that. Just a very brief clip, which I'll cut off.
Since Hans and Fleischman were both well aware of the pitfalls of premature publicity, why would they bypass the accepted convention?
discovery through the media.
I was thinking these guys are no fool. They know what they're doing. These are good scientists.
This is from year 2000. This is before 9/11.
Stephen E. Jackson, physics professor at nearby Brigham Young University, learned of Pons and Fleischmann's work through an informant at the DOE. In a flagrant example of shameless opportunism, Jones insisted on going public quickly with his comparatively much less clear results. Disparaging the excess heat claims of Fleischmann and Pons, Jones' announcement would have effectively prevented the two scientists from patenting their process, a process they had developed on their own over long years of research. On the advice of university attorneys, Pons and Fleischmann, feeling their backs to the wall, reluctantly delivered their work to public scrutiny.
Stephen E. Jones was essentially involved in the cold fusion cover-up. He did something very similar, and I'm summarising this because we're running out of time. Jones didn't say that cold fusion wasn't real. Cold fusion is a nuclear effect that was discovered by Pons and Fleischmann in the late 1980s. Jones came out and said, yeah, cold fusion is real, but you never get any energy out of it. Just forget it. It's just a scientific curiosity. That's essentially what he said. In 2005, he came out and said, yes, the official story of 9/11 is false, but it's thermite that did it. And when we came out and said it's got to do with energy, he says, no, that's ridiculous. That's all space beam nonsense. I've got videos about this. I've got whole things about Jones, on and on and on it goes. Fake picture he used. This was the picture he used in his presentation. This was the actual picture. He said this was thermite burning. What you can't see is the building turning to dust, so he was trying to get rid of that. Let's see. Architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, they did a big tour recently. They removed people from the petition, if you talk about Judy Wood and this research that I told you about. We decided to remove you from our list of petition signers because whether you knew it or not, we've chosen to carefully limit the scope of our message to the collapse of the World Trade Center and the need for a new investigation, which is in that book, by the way, if anybody wants it. That was specifically considered the use of explosives in bringing it down, so they're limiting their study to explosives only. We know it wasn't there. Richard Gage, here we go.
Now, with Judy Wood, is not going to acknowledge any of that evidence and just hand wave it away that she's not practicing science, she's practicing witchcraft. Go ahead.
Judy Wood accuses, Richard Gage accuses Judy Wood of practicing witchcraft because she's written this book, which has 800 pictures in it. You're welcome to flip through it. I'm asking you to buy it. That's not what I'm here for. I'm here to make this information available for you if you want it. If you don't want it, fine. So, I've got loads more stuff. I don't want to go on and on. Just a couple of forum postings. I'm not budging on wooden rails. Call me a gatekeeper if you like, but it's my gate and I'm keeping it. So when threads get closed, locked, deleted. Mick Meaney, I think this was. Move to Bin, Judy Woods and the rest of those truthers on a different planet. All kinds of stuff. Ian Neal said, secondly, Judy Woods is a really bad public presenter. I've watched her DVD presentations, I guarantee the vast majority of her academic peers would agree with me. The way she presents her arguments in a lecture format is very poor indeed. This is Ian Neal, who I counted as a friend in setting up the UK 9/11 Truth Forum in 2005. He's lying. He can't possibly have gone around all her peers and got that opinion from her. Okay. Website visits, yeah, blah, 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 blah. All these online websites, no websites, Raytheon, all the defense contractors have been in there a lot. So, 9/11 is a multi-purpose crime, cemented the war on terror, used black technology, and it tested how much they could fool people. Did this dual layer cover-up work? The answer is yes, it did, and it has, and it's still working. So I think they're building up to something bigger than 9/11. They've got all the technology there, the war on terror is fake. All the wars are illegal. Whoever controls the energy supply controls the destiny of the human race. These guys who did 9/11 control that completely. Fossil fuel scam. Climate change scam. They can put whatever climate they want. Well, maybe not whatever they want. But they can do an awful lot with the weather, is what I would conclude. And there's a lot more to it. There's history behind weather modification. It's not. I know it sounds like I'm talking off the top of my head, but I'm not. I've got a lot more evidence in the other DVDs I've got. So that's basically, as more stuff here, none of the groups will do anything, they're not interested. Politicians have no idea what we're dealing with. I've written to all the police and everything about this. You know, they're on notice now. This is the book. You can get it from wherever the towers go. I've got four copies here, I think. All the stuff's on the website, so you don't have to buy anything. You can download most of it for free anyway. So, thanks for listening. That's it. Break up, have a drink, we'll just do questions and I'll move to
all. One question?
Yeah, sure.
You said they know what they're doing there. Who's honest question, hopefully honest answer, who do you think they are?
I don't know. Could be, let's see, Zionists, Jesuits, Bilderbergers.
You don't know?
I don't know.
Okay.
I really don't.
You don't know? Really minutes,
yeah, sure, absolutely.
You don't know or you're trying to not say?
No, I don't know, I really don't know. I think we know who they're connected to. For example, take science applications, international corporations. They're a military contractor, very big company. They get a lot of secret money from the US. They were in charge of ground zero security on the 12th of September. Science applications, international corporation, a big defense corporation. So they must have linked to people who did, somewhere. They must know that.
The information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.